independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. We're discussing Arch Manning. We'll get to Lovie Smith being in the less stressful position of any first-year head coach in a couple of seconds. But first, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Troy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Troy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, well, he's on the subject of David Carr. I just got a question. Do you guys think he might have succeeded if he would have went to a ready-to-win now team? I'll hang up and listen, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, Gary. It would have been a more likely chance of him succeeding if he had an offensive line that could keep him off his butt. He flashed. I mean, there's a reason he went number one. It wasn't a reach drafting him number one. Would you like to have redone that, draft Julius Peppers? Sure. But he was a top three, top five quarterback in the NFL. He was going to be picked number one by other teams if they had the number one pick. So he was talented, and he showed flashes of that talent. But I think he did get PT sack D. He ruined his career.
I had guys that were in the offensive meeting rooms that said that the offense would sit there and talk about audibles and talk about, you know, things to do if they saw certain kinds of pass rushes and things. And that it was just a lost cause to even talk about it because they knew that the minute that the play started to break down, he was heading for the hills and he was going to hit the ground. And there's something to be said about if he was drafted by a team that had an offensive line, could he have turned out differently? Because I think it's a possibility. I'm not going to say it's a probability. It's definitely a possibility because of the fact that he could throw the long ball so well. That if you could protect that guy, he had the tools to be a good quarterback.
713-780-3776. So I believe of all of the first-year head coaches in the NFL this year, 10 of them, Lovie Smith, who is one of those 10, I believe if you look across the board, that he is in the least amount of stress of any of the other first-year head coaches. Because, look, I don't think we expect the Houston Texans to win a whole lot of games. I think Nick Caserio is still in that mindset, too, where he wouldn't say this, but he's rebuilding, and he would say, let's look at the process more than the actual results. I also don't think they hired Lovie Smith to carry them to the playoffs. I don't think he hired Lovie Smith with, you know, Super Bowl in the mind. We're visioning Super Bowl parades in the city of Houston. We talk about this quite a bit. Lovie Smith is the first-year head coach for the Houston Texans. His most important job is not wins on Sunday. It's developing the young talent on this team. And if that's the priority of the job, how could that be stressful in a first year as a first-year head coach in the National Football League?
Yeah, look, and we also talked about the fact that he's got a built-in golden parachute and he's going to be protected because of the way they screwed up the first coaching search and because of the way the second coaching search went. There's no way they're getting rid of him anytime soon because of the fact that they've already misstepped so many times. So he's going to be just fine. And I think it's the ideal situation for both because as good as he was with the Bears, Lovie had some missteps. And you and I both know that Illinois in the college ranks didn't go well. And Tampa Bay was really kind of set up to fail. They weren't trying to do a whole lot and Brady wasn't there. And it was a different Tampa Bay team than we're talking about these days. In this situation, he can get comfortable again. And he doesn't feel the pressure from management on a game-by-game basis. And he's supposed to do what he's supposed to do, which is the things that David Culley didn't seem capable of doing, which is just manage the day-to-day, manage the in-game, make sure you take care of your challenges and your timeouts and put the right players on the field, trust your staff, you know, communicate with your staff,
yep,
and then go from there because they're not in a win-now mode for this season. So he's in a great position.
See, I was looking at it more from the win-now mode 2022. You're not in it. You're in a, you know, rebuild, not a win-now. But I didn't even think of the 2021 situation in which you did just fire David Culley. So it kind of has this natural parachute and the safety net for Lovie Smith. Because, I mean, what scenario in the world is Lovie Smith getting fired after 1 year? Like, there is not a scenario that exists that Lovie Smith's getting fired after one season, unless you just go 0-17 and all of a sudden he's turned into David Culley. Like, there's not, I don't see a way that Lovie Smith only gets 1 year. Like, look at the rest of the first-year head coaches in the NFL. Todd Bowles taking over for Bruce Arians in Tampa Bay. Obviously, there's a lot of pressure and stress there with Tom Brady, and you have Super Bowl aspirations. You don't
want
a Super Bowl.
And you lost Gronk, right?
Yeah.
So that was a big weapon for Brady. But yeah, you're expected to at least not take a step back. If not, the expectations are obviously Super Bowl or bust. But the last thing that they want to see and Brady can afford to do is have a step backwards.
And think about it as well that, like, from my opinion, I'm not so sure he's the best NFL head coach on that staff. So if they're in a spot where they go 10-7 and fizzle out in the postseason, it's all of a sudden, okay, do we need to keep Byron Leftwich at the expense of Todd Bowles? I think that's a scenario that's likely. Josh McDaniels going to the Raiders. Look, I think there's always going to be pressure for a Las Vegas coach. I think there's always going to be pressure for a coach that has an owner with the last name Davis.
No question.
Now, we have seen with Mark Davis that he's willing to give a leash and to be loyal to his head coach. I think he was very loyal to John Gruden.
I think he was
over
the top loyal to Gruden.
Exactly. So, like, I see that job having pressure. Look, they're ready to win, too. They made the playoffs last year. They just spent a lot to get Davante Adams. That's a team that does not look like it wants to go backwards. McDaniels in the first year is supposed to take them at level up. I don't think they're a contender in the AFC, but certainly a team that should be in the postseason. That's a way more stressful job than Lovie Smith.
It's very stressful because that's a very fine line, right? They want to be able to give you some rope, so to speak, and some leeway because of the fact this is your first year. And you're going to be changing the entire offensive system, coming from a guy that was an offensive-minded head coach in Gruden, but maybe a little bit more old school. Now you're going to be coming to a whole new philosophy, a different way of life, the way he did it with the Patriots, a guy that's going to be trying to do it his way with veteran players. But because you got Adams, because everybody from afar looking at that team says, where are the holes with your skill positions? You've got everything. You got a running game with Jacobs. You've got receivers starting with Adams and Renfro. You've got one of the best tight ends with Waller. You've got an improved offensive line. You just went and got Chandler Jones on the defensive side of the football to add to the defenders that you've been putting out there, Crosby and otherwise. You look at this team and say, hey, it's the expectation should be, since you made it last year, to take the next step. However, because you have a first-year new head coach with a new offensive philosophy, there might be a little leeway to say, okay, but also we need to be forgiving of the fact that it might not happen right away for him.
And Davis is loyal, but with a good roster comes stress. Yep. Like with a good roster comes the high bar of trying to get back to a playoff spot, like would be the situation for the Raiders. Dennis Allen in New Orleans. Like, one of my favorite sayings in sports is, don't replace a legend. And I would consider Sean Payton in New Orleans a legend to New Orleans Saints fans. And now Dennis Allen's replacing that legend in New Orleans, brought on the Super Bowl, and he's doing it with a roster that I think is better now than it was when Sean Payton announced his quote-unquote retirement. But still, Jameis Winston's your quarterback. Like, that's always a bit of a fear factor. You have the uncertainty of Michael Thomas. Like, yeah, you brought in some other targets with Landry and Olave, the rookie that you drafted. Yeah. But Dennis Allen's looking at a lot of stress in year one in New Orleans.
I think he's got a built-in bailout, though, Jeremy, because of the fact that your quarterback is still a guy that is known in Jameis Winston as throwing as many interceptions as he can touchdown passes. And so because he's not Drew Brees, the fact is that Dennis Allen's going to have the bailout of saying, yeah, we put together the best team we could around him. We didn't know Jameis was still going to Jameis. We thought that he learned having been behind Drew Brees and being with Sean Payton, and then you just wait and see. If he succeeds, obviously Dennis Allen's in a great spot. If he fails, I feel like the pressure will all go and be pointed at Jameis before he feels any kind of heat.
713-780-ESPN. We believe that Lovie Smith has the least stressful job of any of these first-year head coaches. Let us know if you disagree. A couple of the other first-year head coaches, Nathaniel Hackett, that's a ton of pressure because Nathaniel Hackett, okay, fine, you bring him in. I don't think he was a hotshot coordinator or anything like that to be like, okay, well, this guy's awesome. Exactly. Like, he's going somewhere over now. I believe he's calling the plays in Denver. But then,
oh, he will call him in Denver, I believe, yeah.
And they're trading for a Russell Wilson.
Like, that's where it all changed.
A lot of stress there.
Absolutely.
Now.
If you were still dealing with the Denver Broncos of a year ago and they were still trying to figure out the quarterback position and they were experimenting with, you know, they did find a young running back, the kid from Carolina, but they before that, you know, you're still trying to try and get veterans in there and figure a lot of things out. I think that he would have been in a really easy street situation. The minute that all changed was when they made that trade and gave up all that they gave up to go get Russell Wilson.
Yep.
Because now you're not dealing with Drew Locke. You're dealing with a guy that's going to be a future Hall of Famer, a guy that's trying to win again, a guy that's getting out of a situation where they didn't put enough weapons in his mind around him and he was begging for them. Now he's got a situation that's all about win now, and now all the pressure goes on Hackett and Wilson together, but if either of the two are going to take the heat, it's going to be Hackett first.
That's where it changed. If Drew Locke's your quarterback,
yes,
you don't have the stressors of winning 9, 10, 11 games in year one in a very competitive division. You trade for Russell Wilson, who is considered to be one of the top 5, top 7, top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, at an advanced age, the demands and the idea and your goals now become much higher. Mike McDaniel, this is, to me, the most interesting man in all. It is my guy. Everybody's my guy, according to Blinkers.
Right.
But this
guy
is legitimately one of my guys. I love Mike McDaniel. I don't know if he's going to be a good NFL head coach or not. I'm just amazed and very entertained
That's not
with
the
who
hashtag
he is.
S your guy. That's not a sarcastic your
no,
guy.
He's my guy.
That is your guy.
Yeah. Mike McDaniel, my guy. What you doing there in Miami?
That's right.
But kind of like Nathaniel Hackett with Russell Wilson, the moment they trade for Tyreek Hill is the moment where Mike McDaniel's stress in year one goes to an all-time high. Give away a first-rounder, $40 million. Stress becomes very difficult.
Built-in bailout with Tua because there's been so much scrutiny about him not being the guy. So you have a chance that you can just get a pass.
But as an offensive guy, he's supposed to bring out the most in Tua.
But if he's not capable of having enough to bring out of him that's going to do benefit for the team, he gets the benefit of the doubt.
Can't coach this team.
But you're right. Once you made that deal and got a guy like Hill, now all expectations have changed. Because now, no matter what, it should be simplistic. Get him the ball. Even if it's a quick slant or a quick, you know, get the snap and get rid of it. I'd get it out of your hands as quick as possible. You know, 5-yard passes. But if he fails now with the money that they're paying and the trade that they made to get Tyreek Hill, there's going to be pressure felt by him.
Kevin O'Connell feels pressure in the sense that the Vikings should be a playoff team.
Yep.
Lots of offensive talent there. Brian Daboll in New York. I think that the Giants situation is somewhat similar to the Texans situation in the sense that you still don't really know who your franchise quarterback's going to be. You're auditioning a couple of guys.
Because you're auditioning Saquon Barkley, too, because you got a decision to make because you did draft him number one overall. You're right. Similar to the Texans, you're doing a final audition for Daniel Jones, not having picked up his last year option to try and figure out if he's your guy or not.
Biggest difference, New York versus Houston. Then you have Doug Peterson in Jacksonville. I don't think he has a whole lot of stress in year one because he's taken over stinking Urban Meyer, and they feel like it's more of a long-term thing than a short-term thing. And then Matt Eberflus, Chicago. I feel like his pressure is developing Fields more than anything else.
But I think that's why Doug Peterson feels the same.
Yeah.
Because as an offensive mind and a guy that's been able to do it with multiple quarterbacks, I think Peterson's expected to be the guy that brings Lawrence to a level we expected to see flashes of last year. We didn't see enough. So I think Eberflus, he's okay, right? But he's going to be leaning more on his old coordinator too. And I think that I don't think he'll feel as much as Peterson will in terms of development of the quarterback quickly because Lawrence was already supposed to be pretty close to NFL ready. So we'll see how those two. In the Minnesota situation, I think you're going from a defensive-minded head coach to an offensive-minded head coach. And with all the weapons they have there with running and passing, he's there. I think there's a lot of expectations.
It's kind of like D'Antoni when the Rockets hired him. Like, they went from a defensive-minded head coach to an offensive-minded head coach. Remember when the Rockets hired D'Antoni, they wanted a defensive-minded guy with an offensive team, and Morey was like, no, screw that. We're going to soup up our offense even more.
We're just going to outscore everybody. Yeah.
Lovie Smith, least stressful first-year head coach in the NFL. Do you disagree? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Coming up next, the Texans are improved. But are they really improved? We'll tell you what we mean when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes. Real fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5.
Turn down for what?
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Texans are improved. We agree with that, right? We feel like the 2022 Houston Texan roster is better than the 2021 Houston Texan roster. We all agree with it. We all think that, right?
Yeah,
they're better coached.
I absolutely think they're in a much better position than a year ago.
53 this year is going to be better than the 53 last year. I think they've upgraded at head coach, right? Lovey's better than David Culley. Any objections there? I don't think there's any objections there. I would say Pep Hamilton's a better offensive coordinator than what's the old boy's name? I already forgot his name. Tim Kelly.
Yep.
Tim Kelly. Bill O'Brien's old buddy. So I feel like you've upgraded there. You're still awash defensively because Lovie Smith's still the defensive coordinator. So I feel like you've upgraded the OC, the play caller. You've upgraded the head coach, and you've upgraded the roster. So the Texans are improved. We all agree there. Texans are better now than they were last year. But sometimes we fall into this trap as, you know, looking at one team and how they stack up from a year ago to where they are now. And we kind of lose sight sometimes that they're not playing the past teams. They're not playing the ghost of 2021. This is a conversation we talk about all the time with the Astros. Yeah, the Astros in 2022 might not be as good as the 2019 Astros, but the 2019 Astros ain't on the 2022 schedule. It's how you are relative to the rest of the league. So I believe that the Texans have improved. I think that they're going in the right direction. The arrow's pointing up on the Houston Texans, but I don't feel that they're really improved. And by this, I mean, I actually think they're going to get worse in the division than they were a year ago. Last year, they finished third in the AFC South behind, in front of Jacksonville, who they beat twice. I think that those two teams this year are going to be flipped. I think we're looking at a Houston Texans fourth place finish in the AFC South. So, yes, they're better, but they're not.
Well, I mean, you know how I feel. I think that's fantastic. I mean, if that happens, then the suck has been embraced with open arms. And there was a big squeeze, and at the end, you're going to be able to feel the love in the draft for another year, and then you can really, truly get ready to start taking those steps forward and upward as you continue to get better and better. So I'd be fine with all of that because, as we've discussed over and over again, they're not ready to worry about the wins and losses, nor do I want them to be evaluated by the wins and the losses because, as we just said, we both feel like they're a better team. They're a better team on the field, off the field, and everywhere around the field.
See, that's where we differ from other radio shows, mm-hmm. is that I think there's some other shows that want the Texans to be better in the win-loss column. And I think you could go to the Highway Hell. I think you could listen to other shows at this very station, yes. For being completely honest with you, where they start to envision, oh, 8 wins would be good for the organization. 8 wins would be good for the franchise.
Disagree. And
I think it depends on how you get to the 8 wins. Like if Davis Mills, if you get to 8 wins because Davis Mills is suddenly a franchise quarterback and you hit home runs on every single one of your picks, I would take that scenario. I would sign up for that scenario. I just don't feel like that scenario is likely.
And I don't feel they're deep enough, right? I think that, you know, like we said, the young guys they added on defense, I think they're going to be really good. They're going to be staples of this defense for a long period of time. But adding 3 position players on defense and getting a few free agents is not going to make your entire defense playoff worthy. The same way on offense. I mean, I think they finally started figuring some things out to get some continuity on the offensive line. They invested some draft capital to get a better player at guard. You look at what they've done and how they've gone about their business, including adding some legit guys that can run the football, and you're better. But because you're better, does that make you a playoff team? No. Does that make it valuable to you to win more games than 4 or 5? In my personal opinion, no, because that 1 year of catching a few extra wins could be detrimental to you catching a comeback to get into respectability and more quicker on the big picture.
This is also where I would disagree with Bill Parcells. What are you talking about? How did you pull Bill Parcells? Well, he says you are what your record is, right? Like you're always what your record is. And I get that for a single season. But whenever you start to look at it from like a 5-year window, I disagree. Like the Texans could take a step back this year in terms of the win total. They could go from 4 wins to 3 wins. It doesn't mean that I feel like the Texans are taking a step back on the rebuild. It doesn't even change the stock arrow for me, for the Houston Texans, based on what you see on the field. So the Texans are improved, but they're not really improved. I just broke down the AFC South, where I don't think the Houston Texans are going to finish in the top 3 in the AFC South. I think they're going to be at the bottom of the cellar in the division because I expect Jacksonville to jump them. Also, how many games did the Texans win last year? They won 4. They went 4-13. Their Vegas total is 4.5. Like they're not going to even be that much improved according to the odds makers, to what Vegas is saying. This team's still going to struggle to win 4 games in 2022.
And unlike for all of you out there that are just biting through your tongue and sitting there trying to dial the phone number or text
713-780-3776.
Because you're ticked off that Jacksonville could be better than the Texans. Jacksonville spent a boatload of money on young players to fortify their roster, which the Texans haven't done and shouldn't have done just yet. So slow your roll. They overspent in free agency. They got a new coach that's an offensive-minded coach that's been brought in to really try to right the ship and really specifically to work with their number one overall draft-picked quarterback, which you don't have. And so it's okay if they're for a year or two, they're better than you. But I think because you have a plan and you're following it and you're doing things where we can see growth within it, you're doing it the right way. So don't worry what everybody else thinks. Don't worry about those, because from the Parcells perspective, look, I get what he's saying because you can't win games based on potential.
I think it's a singular season view.
But yeah, but from a singular season view, you can also have a loaded roster and a Baker Mayfield at quarterback, and suddenly you don't make the playoffs, and you could say, you know, you are what your record says you are. Well, but on paper, it looks like you had a Super Bowl roster, but because you had one guy that either got hurt or sucked, it could change the whole dynamic. But yeah, overall, if you're a Texans fan, don't worry about if Jacksonville's better than you for a year or two.
OG on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's saying, again, with this horrible take, when the heck does a team go from last place to Super Bowl? How often does that happen? You ain't being realistic at all. By this dumb logic, the dang Jaguars and Browns should have like five Super Bowls each as much as they embraced the suck. There has to be in between years of 8-9, then 12-5. And so on. I don't disagree with that point, OG. I think that it's the natural development and the natural progression of an NFL team. The Texans won four games in 2021. They're going to win X amount of games in 2022, X amount of games in 2023. But I don't think that the Houston Texans are going to reach the playoffs, whether it's 9 wins, whether it's 10 wins, until 3 years from now. Let's just assume the Houston Texans are a playoff team in 2025. Let's say they go 10-7. They're a playoff team in 2025. That's the first year they get back to the playoffs. So from point A, 2021, they won four games. And then whatever point you want to look at it, in 2025, they win 10 games. You don't have to go 4, 6, 8, 9, 10.
No.
You could take a step backwards along the way, 4, 3, 6, 10.
Why is this so hard to understand either? Because of the fact that you're not blowing it up. You're not starting over. You don't have to have, you know, you're going up a flight of stairs, but sometimes you don't have to hit every step along the way. And so if you play it right and embrace the suck for 2 years and you get the maximum from all your draft picks and you see what he was able to do in just one season in adding good young talent in a full draft that he had, plus now you get extra picks from the Watson deal and you just stick with that formula for that second year. And then in the third year, when you start spending a little more on players that you pay a little bit more for and give a few more years to, but are younger and have a chance to bring the team closer towards winning, you can easily go from 4 or 5 wins to a team that then suddenly gets to 9 or 10 wins if you continue to do it by the plan that you've set out. It shouldn't be that hard to figure out.
Even if you look at 2025 as the target date for the postseason, because Battery Chuck on Twitch, they think that they can control the suck, then at a certain point they just blow up and become dominant the next year. There's always teams that go from last place in the NFL to becoming a playoff team in the NFL. They're not saying that the Texans are going to go from last place to then suddenly at the snap of a finger an 11-win team. You can get to the playoffs with 9 wins, 10 wins. But if you just map it out. Let's say 2025, the Houston Texans are a playoff team. Let's say the Houston Texans win 11 games in 2025 to get to the playoffs for the first year since then. The Texans can still take a step back in terms of win total, which everybody looks at win total as like the natural progression of a team, which it is not. It's way more about the development of a team.
Your own general manager told you it's not.
He did. He said it's more about the process than the results. You can take a step back in the win category and take a step forward in the development of your players. But just for a second, 4 wins in 2021. The Vegas total in 2022 is 4.5. Let's say they go under that and they win 3. Doesn't stunt your growth, doesn't stunt your development. Then you can jump up to 6 wins in 2023, then 8 wins in 2024, and now you can make, 2-win improvement, 3-win improvement. Now you're looking like a playoff team.
In the realm, if they do play it by the embrace, if they do embrace the suck for one more year. But that means that in their plan, which we don't know what it consists of, their plan states in year 3, we will be more open to spending more to go get the pieces we don't have. Not in the draft, but go out and spend more in free agency. Kind of do what the Jags did, but don't overpay for the guys that they overpaid for. Get some guys that truly make your roster better that can still play their ass off, but you don't have to go overpay for and overextend for too much, but they make your team better. I could see 6-8 in year 3 if that's in their plan. If they do spend in free agency as well as they draft in the draft where they get the good picks. But it's not, we said from the get-go, it wasn't going to be a quick fix. There's no way that you, and there's no plan or there's no blueprint that says, well, in order to rebuild, you have 2 bad years, but then you get to 6, 8, 10, 12. No, because some teams do it better than others with their planning and the way that they draft and the savvy way that they are able to acquire free agents, maybe even a trade. But I think that it's realistic to say if they stick to the plan that they've already started on, the path that they've started to go down, that they're doing it the right way, and you can see and envision a time very soon where this team is 500 and better and chasing a division title.
3691, say we do embrace the suck. Bet it continues over the years, pick after pick, like the Lions must want to win at some point. We do want the Texans to win at some point. I think we both want it to really start taking place the offseason after this. 8690, I mean, Cincinnati kind of went from last place to the Super Bowl in 2 years. And I think you have to align yourself and put yourselves in that spot. Like, if the Texans win 3 games next year, that to me is not a regression in terms of the overall development of the organization.
How they lose
them.
Yeah,
if they're embarrassed
important.
And they're getting clobbered like they're the Bad News Bears.
If the offensive line is just getting blown up and getting, you know, run over on every play, if guys that you are counting on show that they can't play, if Stingley ends up having a foot injury all year and shows that you drafted the wrong guy,
yep.
Then you could have some real negativity surrounding it.
It's eye test. That's why it's not win total. Like, the win total to me is irrelevant for the Houston Texans in 2022. It's about the eye test. Do you see real development? Do you see a foundation of what can be a winning team? Or do you see Davis Mills stink? Do you see Derek Stingley be banged up all year? John Metchie never recovers from the ACL. It's not about the wins. It's about how you get there. 713-780-ESPN. We'll take your reaction on this if you want to chime in. 713-780-3776. Tell us how stupid we are. That's fine, too. Also, when we return, the top new quarterback wide receiver duos in the National Football League. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Battery Chuck taking us to task on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, says that we're totally wrong with the embrace the suck mindset. He says you're hoping for losses, so when is the point when you hope for wins? Also, OG saying that too. I think this is the first time you give a date when they can be good. You always just said embrace the suck with no end goal. So maybe we should define an end goal. I think that's a good question from OG.
Like, the Battery Chuck part of it, though, it's not like you could predict wins and losses from year to year, but if you see progressions and the roster develops.
And we also don't think you need to see wins in order to see roster development.
Right.
Like, that's to me is asinine.
Those are two separate things.
Yeah, there's two very different entities, but let's define it. Let's define when we think that the Houston Texans should start to win games. Like, when they should and when they could.
I think in year three, you see the first jump to where they could become close to a 500 team.
And now, are we talking about 2022 as year two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think in 23, assuming that they're willing to spend some money too and actually look to add a couple of quality or higher quality free agents than they've been adding.
I'm good with that to an extent. I want them to be in their mid-20s, not their late 20s and their 30s.
And not going out and like overpaying for a Christian Kirk, but getting some guys younger and better than what you have that you didn't draft to try and replace on your roster so that you take another step up.
You want guys that can be with the organization that can be here for 4 years while you're trying to
because
get back to the playoffs.
Because the other prerequisite, Jeremy, is you have a quarterback. And we don't know if you have a quarterback or not. Otherwise, that draft capital is even more important for this next upcoming offseason because you're going to have to go find one.
To answer OG's question in terms of, like, when is the end goal? Like, when do you want the Texans to be a playoff team, or when do you start wanting them to win? Like, let's just simple it down to that. I want the Texans to start winning in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it's realistic to think the Houston Texans will be Super Bowl contenders in 2023. I'm not even completely sold that it's realistic to say they'll be a playoff team in 2023. But that's when I want them to start playing what Brendan always calls significant football in December. Like, I want them to have significant games in 2023. So I think that defines really our thought as a show.
Yep.
Okay, 2023, let's see the Houston Texans start to win some games. And then back to the Battery Chuck point where he says, like, embrace the suck is such a terrible logic. He said you just can't hope for losses until a certain point and then hope for wins unless you're a fan of another team. You just left it blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing that always terrifies me looking at a team that I want to win. I don't want to be in the middle. Like, to me, if you're stuck in purgatory, it's the worst place to be in sports.
Rafael Stone just said it for NBA.
Yeah,
it's the same thing.
I love that Rafael Stone said that. Like, it's the Chuck Hayes, Moochie Norris Rockets, right? Like, you're just stuck as a 41-41 team that's not really going anywhere. The best examples, like, are in this city. The Houston Astros, you know what Jeff Luhnow got, what he did whenever he got here? He tore it down and allowed his team to lose 100 games a few years in a row as no one came to the ballpark, as no one could watch them on TV. And now we are reaping the benefits of what was a terrible, terrible time in Houston Astro history. I think we're seeing it with the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets, they tear it down. They draft some young players. They bring in Jalen Green. They have three first-round draft picks tonight. You hope that you reap the benefits of a team that has struggled for the last few years in the next 5 to 6 seasons to play significant games in the NBA playoffs. It's the same thing in the NFL. Like, if you want a team to just go 8-9 every single season, then you're not going to have the ebbs and flows, the peaks and the valleys. Like, you have to stink for a while to become good for a while in the NFL. Like, if you want football purgatory and you want to go 9-8 every year, you should have never fired Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, and exactly right. But at the same point, you have to have a roster that validates and is capable of doing what you, as whatever your fan expectation is. Because, yes, you can make progress and lose games by 3 points and go 0-17. Because it's so much better than what you had. You had a whole bunch of Geritol-taking AARP members that were on this team a year ago, and you knew that there, every general manager and every team in the league knew there was no chance of that team doing anything to where they could be respectable. But a year later, when they look at the draft and they look at the pieces they added and they look at the development of some of the pieces they took when they didn't have a first or second round draft pick, you can see the fact that the roster is developing and they are creating depth and they are creating talent that goes with it. If they have another draft like that and they have extra picks to play with, The reality is they're going to be even better then. And then when you see what you don't have and you haven't been able to draft and you're willing to spend to go out and get a few pieces that fortify those roster spots that you couldn't get in the draft, now you see the light at the end of the tunnel and it's getting brighter and the wins will start to come with that.
4-6-8-3, if all goes well, 24 through 26 should be when this team is competitive again, going for deep playoff runs. I agree with that. But there are things that you can do in 2022 and 2023 that might give you more wins in 2022 and 2023 that would cost you 24 through 26. And that's always my fighting Rex Burkhead conversation. You bring in a bunch of fighting. Look, Caserio hasn't done this, to Caserio's credit. That's why I've liked what Nick Caserio has done. He's willing to let the young players play. Lovie Smith has talked about how these rookies are going to see significant snaps, how you even see Christian Harris already running with the ones, and how much they love Petrie. Like, that to me is the signs of an organization going the right way. If they win 5 games, that does not say as much to me as what I see with the Texans giving the development to the young players. And I think if you have the long-term viewpoint, which you need to have with this organization, you would agree with that.
See, and Ryan's right. If you're getting blown out in every game and you go 0-17, now that's a legitimate step back. That's a different scenario. But as long as you're playing the young players, because you also have to evaluate, as much as you're evaluating Davis Mills on a one-year scenario, you're evaluating a lot of your draft picks on a 1 to 3 year scenario, because you need to know if I've got a guy that's going to be part of my future for the foreseeable future, or I got a guy that I might have to replace quite quickly, so I might have to address that quicker than I'd like. But in every single position group, there are going to be players that are going to be evaluated while they're playing these games. And it's better to play them than it is to play a veteran that's trying to hang on to a roster spot and create an opportunity somewhere else.
And it might cost you a couple wins.
Yes, it will.
It might cost you a couple wins in the short term. It might cost you a couple wins in 2022. But would I rather win 5 games by giving a heavy dose of snaps to veterans versus 3 games and playing all the rookies to help them out long-term and help out their development? Give me the 3 wins. They're both going to be dead last in the AFC South. Maybe you're ahead of Jacksonville.
Do I want to play Kirksey at linebacker because I want an extra win or two? Or do I want to play the young kids I got behind him to see if I got a guy who could be the next Kirksey for the next 5 years or so?
I'll be honest with you, Blankers. Like, I do not understand the other side of the argument. Like,
I don't either.
We get it a lot. We receive a lot of that. I don't understand the logic of wanting that. I don't understand the logic of wanting to win 6 games with a bunch of fighting Rex Burkheads versus winning 3 games with a bunch of rookies. I don't understand.
And it's more detrimental to get – we've talked about this over and over, too. It's more detrimental to catch that lightning in a bottle and get that one season now of 8 wins than it would be if you got it a year from now or 2 years from now, when you actually have a roster to back it up that says that's not going to be a flash in the pan. That's going to be the start of something where they continue to do this consistently.
9982, Warriors are a great example of being bad for years, going through the rebuild process, and now with 4 titles, it's a very good build. I do also think the Rockets are going to be the new Warriors with the rebuild. That's jumping to conclusions, but I do like the plan. I do like the path. If the pieces fall into place, Rafael Stone is doing it the right way with draft picks because they're a commodity, unlike Morey, who never cared about picks. Also, like, the difference, too, like, I understand that Morey gets some grief here. the huge difference between Morey and Stone, Morey had late first-round draft picks, whereas Rafael Stone has early first-round draft picks. And there is a huge gap between the two. And then I also struggle comparing NBA rebuilds to NFL rebuilds, because an NBA rebuild, you draft a LeBron James, you're set. NFL, it takes a lot longer to build a competitive roster. Breaking news, Mark Berman's got his Twitter back. In case you wanted to know, he just tweeted, "Hey, folks, I was obviously hacked, but thanks to Fox 26's fabulous work, I am back and ready to go to work," and gave a little thumbs up. I talked to his hacker yesterday on Twitter. He wouldn't sell me non-existent fake PS5s for $100. I was willing to offer $100. I did offer $100 to a scammer for a fake PS5. He said no. He turned me down. Can you believe that?
That's really ridiculous because you know he's just trying to pocket as much money as possible. What's one more victim on the hook
exactly
to give you a little less, but you're getting cash all the same?
Why wouldn't he send me his Cash App and let me send $100 for his fake PS5? He had standards, I guess. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, we'll get to the quarterback receiver duo at some point. But coming up next, Joel's expectation that Eric Gordon will not be on the Houston Rockets roster tomorrow. Next, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right. Eric Gordon, will he be a member of the Houston Rockets? Tonight, NBA draft night, Houston Rockets pick number 3, pick number 17, pick number 26. Three first-round draft picks could potentially have major impacts for this organization. It should, if we're being completely honest with you. But if you look further along, some of the things that could happen tonight. Will Eric Gordon be a Houston Rocket tomorrow when we open our show at noon?
Nope, I don't think so, and I don't think he should. And I think that this is the same way I thought that they made a mistake when they didn't trade him at the trade deadline a year ago. And Phoenix made an offer that, if you believe all the different rumor sites and people in the know, they said that Rafael Stone would get back to the Suns thinking he could get a better offer. He couldn't. When he went back to the Suns, they decided to pass. And I think it hurt both teams because it could have helped the Rockets clear a veteran out, give more playing time to the younger guys down the stretch. It could have helped the Suns, who obviously needed a third scoring option. I think now you have three suitors already lined up for Eric Gordon that Van Gundy and others mentioned at the end of the year. Miami and Philadelphia are added to Phoenix, who are all looking at Eric Gordon as a guy that could be their short-term third option as playoff teams that could, and it fits what Eric Gordon wants to. He wants two things. He wants to play for a winner, and he wants his option picked up for not this season, but the following season, which neither any of those three teams would gladly do. So I think that from a Rockets perspective, once you moved on from Christian Wood, we knew the other two guys that should be moved on from are Eric Gordon and John Wall. One easier than the other, obviously, to do so. And we saw what happened with Wall the other day, picking up his option. But now that they're going to be talking about either they're going to try and move him, which I think is virtually impossible, and if they can't, doing what should have been done all along, which is a buyout. So that's going to be a tougher challenge. Because there will be demand for Eric Gordon, as long as you don't set the expectations too high, and we've heard in the past they have to get a first-round pick. I think from those three teams, if you want a first-round pick, it doesn't have to be this year. It could be in those years subsequently when Daryl gave away all the picks and you could use one. And we all know that, you know, things change in a heartbeat. A team that's good this year might not be as good in a year or two. So take your chances on that. But if you can get a future first and whatever you need to take on as part of that for one more year of a veteran salary.
Just nothing more than a year.
Yeah, nothing more long term than that. But if you need to take an expiring contract or two to make it work, those players aren't going to play for you just like they did with the Christian Wood trade. But you know what? It's going to set up a whole lot more playing time for the guys that matter to you.
It's kind of the perfect segue of what we were talking about last segment.
It really
where
is.
You have a veteran player who is on a young team, where Eric Gordon's probably going to give you more wins than, let's say, a first rounder this year or a first rounder next year, whatever you get in return for Eric Gordon. But it helps you long term. One, because Eric Gordon's not going to be here long term. Two, you're trading for something that you hope can be a piece of something that is helping you out long term. But then also, like, the Christian Wood effect, and which, okay, the ball's not going to be in Eric Gordon's hands. It's not going to be in Christian Wood's hands, which means it's going to be in the hands of whoever you take at number three. Or it could be in the hands of Jalen Green a little bit more, or one of your young players a little bit more. So I love Eric Gordon. I think he's a very good basketball player. I think he's even a bit underrated, while maybe a little bit overpaid. I think he's really good. I think he belongs in a contender because I think he makes a contending team better. And at this stage of his career, I want that for Eric Gordon. So it'd be bittersweet because, I do like Eric Gordon. But for the benefit of, one, him going to a contender, and then, two, for the Houston Rockets as well, it makes way too much sense. I too, like the idea of what you brought up of where you already have three first-rouners right now tonight, 3, 17, 26. There's a lot of people, too, that are thinking that the Rockets might not keep all three, which I actually like the idea of keeping all three draft picks because you have to
assume. The more you see the young talent you could add.
I saw one mock draft today that had Easton at 17 and then, how do you say his name?
Beauchamp.
Beauchamp at number 26. Yep. Like, if you give me Easton and Beauchamp at 17 and 26, why am I trading up to number 12?
Even Ty Washington at 17 is a guy that they think might be the most underrated possible star player in the league in a couple of years that you could get at 17.
And if you have 12 and 17, like, you're getting pretty, like, if you look at NBA draft history, there's probably as many good players at 12 as there is 17. Like, there's not a huge gap there. And on top of that, picks 12 through 17 probably have a good amount of bust potential, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have 26 as your bust insurance. Like, keep 26, and now you have a bust insurance of a late first-round draft
plus,
pick.
Plus, who's to say, Jeremy, that you have every intention of keeping 26 and a team that desperately needs a guy that's slipping?
Yep.
And they come to you at 26 and say, give us 26. We'll give you top of the second round and another pick down the road. And suddenly you're now rebuilding what Daryl gave away in future years when you don't have those picks. But it's a deeper draft than a lot of people thought about at the start of the year. And now you're seeing that guys that were potentially first round picks at one point might even slide to the top half of the second round. So you don't have to worry about exactly where they fall. You just know that there's going to be some demand at the end of the first round by teams that are playoff caliber, mm-hmm. needing a player or two, going, I didn't expect him to be there.
You think you can get a first for Gordon?
I think you still can.
From a playoff caliber team? Like, you're not getting a lottery pick for Gordon, let's be realistic. But a late first either this year or a playoff team that you expect to have a late first next year or the year after.
So especially for like a team from Phoenix, because they know that Chris Paul's going to be going away in a couple of years, but you still have Booker and you still have all the young guys they've drafted in the
Ayton.
Last couple of years. No, I don't think they want Ayton, to be right. honest with you.
No, they don't.
I think that if you can, because you're going to have to tie up some of the kids. The kid from Villanova is going to, Mikal Bridges, is going to need a contract, right? And then after that, the kid from Carolina is going to need a contract because he's one of their younger pieces. But you have a nucleus enough to say, hey, I'm not going to be as worried about draft picks in 25. The same way the Pistons decided to bail on Jeremy Grant and took a 2025 first. If you can get Phoenix to say, I'll give you my first in a year where you don't have one, no matter where it falls, now you have one. And that's important. And I think that helps you in the overall long-term development of the franchise.
See, I like the idea more of trading Gordon for a future pick than I do of trading for a current pick. And this is maybe me talking out of both sides of my mouth because I just mentioned I don't want the Rockets to trade up tonight because I want them to draft at 17 and draft at 26 just because of the math. Like, you have bust potential at 17. You have bust potential at 26. You also have bust potential at number 12. So if you're trading 17 and 26 for number 12, like, yeah, you're identifying somebody that you like a little bit more, but there's bust potential both at 12 and 17. Give me the numbers, right? Give me the volume. Give me two players instead of one because the likelihood of two players being a bust versus one player being a bust, I just like my chances a little bit more there. And to your point, looking at some of the mock drafts, like, I'd rather have whoever's there at 17 and 26 than whoever's there at number 11 or 12.
Yeah, and look, for all you people that love Eric Gordon, and here's the kudos to Eric Gordon. He's been a class act because he could have been like John Wall has been. Mm-hmm. He could have been like Christian Wood has been, and a lot of it you guys don't even know to the extent Christian Wood was behind the scenes. Eric Gordon's been a consummate professional. He's helped the young kids out. When he's played well for the most part and done his job. But he's not shy about saying, look, I like it here, and I like what my years have been here, but sure, I would rather play with a winning team. So you do him a solid, but it does you a solid, because now Josh Christopher can show you what he really is and get some more run. Whoever you take at 17 and 26 probably aren't going to be the big that you're going to take at three. They're going to need some time, too. So you're the same way you're clearing up front court space for the kid you draft tonight and for Şengün, by moving Wood, you move Gordon, and now you got more minutes for the kids that you're going to evaluate to see how they fall in place with Jalen Green, and if KPJ in a make-it-or-break-it year gets more time on the floor. it's a smart move for so many reasons for this franchise.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Brendan just put up a poll on our Twitter, at ESPN975 on Twitter, and you can text us in your thoughts, too, 713-780-3776. Who do you want at number three tonight for the Rockets? Paolo Banchero, Chet Holmgren, Jaden Ivey. I think Brendan made a good decision here not putting Jabari there because that's not realistic.
Nope.
Rockets stay. Right, they don't even have to stay at three. Who do you want tonight for the Rockets? Paolo, Chet, Ivey.
I think, look, and I've said as much as I probably can, I think that the medical concerns with Chet I'm hearing are real. I think there are teams
I've seen that on the internet, though. So I don't think you're out of line by saying
you've
anything.
Seen exactly what pinpointed to exactly what it is.
Pretty close. I've seen close.
Okay, because I'm not going to say that part of it, but just it is real about his medical.
Here's the headline that I've seen at mixedarticle.com. So you don't have to say anything. Chet Holmgren, medical condition could cost him the NBA draft, comma, does he have a heart disease, question mark.
So there you have it. And I tipped you guys off to this a couple weeks ago, that this was starting to rumble. And because of it, teams are starting to reevaluate their thought process on this draft. If you're a Rockets fan, to me, you hope that OKC does not balk at that and they still take Chet at two. And I think he makes sense for them because he's a project. As good as he could possibly be, you won't see how that development for 2 to 3 years. I think that the Rockets, with the way Green developed in his first year, are a little bit kind of fast forward of that with a big. And I think Banchero is the perfect fit because he doesn't have to be the man. He's not going to command the ball. He's not a guy that's going to try and be the franchise. He can do whatever he needs to do. He's versatile enough, and he fits with the young group that they have.
There's a website, a medical website, that I just pulled up this to. It says, Chet Holmgren, health and medical condition due to heart disease. The very first paragraph says, I should be laughing at this, the fact that Chet is declining to share his medical history with the NBA teams has been front and center in the league's most recent news. So this is going around league circles. According to reports, the footballer is trying to avoid going through with a coronary heart screening that was scheduled for him. A footballer, Chet Holmgren. Look, I think the popular answer from this poll at ESPN 97.5, who do you want tonight? I think everybody's going to pick Paolo Banchero.
Well, it's the name they've heard most, too, associated with the team.
So I think what we should do as a show is try to come, I guess we could go Price is Right rules here. What percentage of people who vote in this poll are going to pick Paolo Banchero? Banchero, Holmgren, Ivy, what percentage will Paolo Banchero win the poll with?
82%.
82? I go $1.
82%.
That seems high. We're going Price is Right
rules. These are Rockets fans that have a keyboard and red Kool-Aid at the waiting.
So we're going Price is Right rules.
It's fine.
Brendan, what are you going with?
Is it unfair that I already see the current results?
Yeah, you can't play. Yeah, I go $1. Out. I go $1 on Paolo Banchero. 1% that he wins this poll. So head on over to ESPN 97.5. Who do you want tonight, Paolo, Chet, or Ivy? How do you feel voting. About those? What's that?
I better get voting.
I'll even vote for Paolo for you.
Okay. Well, I will tell you guys. I'm not going to give you the number right now.
I just voted. I know the number.
Well, I was say, I will tell you. I think there's a shot that Joel could be right. It's probably a little high, but I don't think it's crazy.
I like that everybody's not voting for Jaden Ivey. What do you want to see with the last two
picks?
Did
that surprise you a little bit that Mario Elie was so high on Jaden Ivey? And yeah. I've heard a couple other guys I know across the league say that they're very high on him.
His athleticism plays. Like, I agree with that. My biggest fear with Jaden Ivey is that his shot looks broke. And I know that he hit 33% of threes at Purdue, but he shoots from his waist. And he doesn't, I mean, he's more like catch and shoot. Like, there's sometimes he would knock in a shot off the dribble. But even then, it's like off the dribble, create space, shoot from the hip. I don't know if that's going to play in the NBA.
Can I tell
I'm really
who
worried about
came
his shooting.
In shooting from the hip?
Who?
Steph Curry. And he still, to some degree, doesn't shoot like your above the head extended jump shot. He starts it from about the middle of his chest a lot.
He does. Now, did you have fear that Steph Curry wouldn't be able to create his own shot, though?
No,
Steph
I just had fear physically he was too small to play in the league.
I didn't think Steph was going to be great, but I always thought he'd be a good shooter. Mm-hmm. And, like, he always showed he was
and
a good
again,
shooter, Davidson.
It's in his bloodlines, too.
713-780-3776. Head over to ESPN 97.5 to vote on who do you want tonight. You said 82% on Paolo Banchero. Mm-hmm. I went $1. Price
See,
is
I think,
rules.
And the other thing that I want to throw in on Ivy is the fact that some of the intangible things, too. Like, everybody comes in with athleticism and the fact that they can, you know, they're athletic, they can jump, they can do things. But it's how do you differentiate yourself from the rest of the league or from the rest of your team or from guys that play the same position? Mm-hmm. That means you got to be able to get your shot off. That means you got to, can you defend guys and be a two-way player? Can you do things ball handling wise that other guys can't? Otherwise, you could be Harold Miner or Isaiah Ryder as much as you could be a guy that's an all-star, And that's what worries me, because you already have plenty at that position that he plays.
3403 says he wants Jordan Alvarez. He's not up for vote, 3403. Coming up next, though, we'll switch the conversation back over towards the Astros. Don't let Alex Bregman get hot. We discuss when we come back. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.